Right, I'm going to ask the speakers and David and probably Paddy as well to join us, because there have been a number of issues that have been brought up, and I'm going to ask Brigid to talk first about the sort of supports that are available in terms of training, in terms of putting in place stuff to help businesses to actually prepare. But it's quite fascinating, because one of the questions we'll be asking is, what happens if the UK banks pull out of SEPA, which is the Single European Payment Area, which I'll ask Rory to just have a think about whilst Breda is dealing with funding. Breda?
I suppose I'm not really going to talk 100% about funding, because I suppose a lot of what has been said today, and rightly so, so far by the speakers, is about the downside or the potential risks or impacts on your business, and it's quite scary. So what I'd say is, if you don't know what you don't know at this stage, the first thing you should do is go on to the local enterprise office website, localenterprise.ie/Galway. And on our landing page there, there's a Brexit scorecard. It'll take you through a number of questions. And by filling out that questionnaire, you will automatically be triggered for attention by us, where we can identify where your business is exposed to potential Brexit impacts, and we can assign a mentor to sit down with you and work through the issues on a very specific business, in a business manner with you, in terms of how it impacts. And an example I would give you, I was at the hairdressers at the weekend, and the girl was saying to me, have you been busy? And I said, yeah. I said, there's a load of Brexit events at the moment. I said, I've done two. And I said, I'm going out to Clifton on Wednesday. And she says, oh, we're not really impacted by Brexit. And I said, all right. I said, where do you get your products? And she said, oh, I buy them from Dublin. I said, is it a distributor? And she says, it is. Oh, my God, it probably comes from the UK. You know, it's every business is going to be impacted. And I think the guys were saying as well, like, you know, 70% of your products on the supermarket are going to come from Brexit. If those tariffs are imposed, the cost of those products are going to go up. And that's in your day-to-day life without ever having a business. But anyway, three things it struck me. If you have a business and you're concerned about increased costs, we have a program that's available to everybody, regardless of whether you employ more than 10 or less than 10, where we can go in and help you take costs out of your business, so that if you are doing business in the UK, or even if you're not, if you're doing business across just on a national basis, or even into the north, which will effectively be the UK come the 29th of March, we can help you look at how you're doing your business and take costs and make it more efficient, which will help you manage the impact or the exposure you might have on your profit margins as a result of all of this change. The other thing I would say is, by engaging with your local enterprise office, even if you're in Mayo, if you've come down here from Mayo, or wherever you are in the country, fill out your local enterprise office Brexit scorecard and get one-to-one advice specific to your needs in relation to those changes. And another key aspect, Rory mentioned it there, most businesses fail because they don't sell enough, they don't have enough customers. And I think mentioned about the digital impact. The local enterprise offices have an offer where they have financial support of up to £2,500 available for you. If you have an existing website, and maybe you're very focused on a UK tourist market now, we can help you financially to translate that website by virtue of that grant. So there's a lot of practical supports that are available, just waiting for you to engage with us and avail of them. The customs supports that we have, they were announced last week in the budget. I'm not that clear what they look like at the moment, but as soon as we know, we will be communicating those as well. And anybody who is already engaged with us in relation to Brexit, we will obviously be following up with those supports. So what I would say is, if you don't know how you are impacted, or you don't think you are impacted, you have nothing to lose by filling out a scorecard and finding out whether that is the case or not. Okay, thanks.
Okay, we're a small area, and I wanted to ask David Waldron to come up and talk to us a bit about the small and medium-sized industry association that he sits on, their national council. These are businesses small like us who are facing the same sort of thing. So We wanted to try and understand what the ISME Association does and what they are seeing elsewhere in the country. Is it the same as what we're seeing? Are there different things that are going on, and how they can help our businesses as well?
Hi everyone, David Waldron is my name, and I'm a National Council member with ISME. And I suppose from our perspective as an independent organisation that assists SMEs throughout the country in terms of lobbying, training, HR issues, Brexit, GDPR, these are all key criteria in order for businesses to survive and ensure growth is at the forefront. Obviously, with Brexit looming, it's pretty much on the radar in recent times. And interestingly enough, from an ISME viewpoint, from recent surveys that came back, 77% felt that Brexit wouldn't have an impact on staffing. Now, the reason that result came back, that was from about 1,200 ISME members. I suppose we look after mainly micro, so you're talking 1 to 10 employees per business, and then you have the medium and the larger enterprises are up to say 250 employees. So they're predominantly in the services, in the financial, in the insurance, which may not directly be as affected as say construction and distribution or other verticals. But that's not to say, after listening to the guys here, Rory, Gerardo and Eddie, that there's a lot of finer intricacies that maybe business owners don't fully understand, because there's a lot of convoluted information going out. So even the chart that Rory put up there in terms of the €100 product and in turn the 60% increase. And I suppose it's important to get the basic steps right. So the ORI number, as Rory said in terms of the just having a UK bank account in place, it's actually came out of the survey as well that 11% of ISME members were actually considering relocated either their full business or half their business over to the UK, I suppose, to overcome a lot of the barriers that could potentially be in place if it's a hard Brexit. That was a pretty notable result from the survey. Other results in the survey that came back, in terms of staff reduction, 17% felt that there could be a level of reduction in staff numbers directly as a result of Brexit. So trying to overcome issues like that, again, I know it might be difficult to plan what's going to unfold come March 29th next year, but looking at different markets, i.e. Germany, Italy, Spain, and again, from an e-commerce perspective, as was highlighted here earlier, it may be a way of overcoming some of the challenges from an Irish-UK trade perspective, depending on the nature of business and the goods and services that you're distributing or importing and exporting. Just some other results as well, just to give you an idea of what our membership is telling us. So how will your turnover be affected by Brexit? So to fall by 20% or more is coming in at, so 2.7% of ISME companies predict an increase in turnover as a direct result of Brexit, but 44% predict no change and 45% predict a decrease. So that 45% out of 1,200 members that took the survey, extrapolate that out from 10,000 members is pretty hard hitting. Just over 10% of ISME businesses foresee an increase in profitability. A third anticipate no change, and over half see profits falling, and 9% predict an increase up to 20%. So again, there might be niche markets there where that could actually be advantageous. What proportion of your imports or purchases are sterling denominated or from the UK? So almost 80% of ISME companies have some level of exposure to sterling on the import buy side, and this would suggest an increase in profitability, at least in the short term, given the sterling's relative weakness against the euro. But in the long term, I suppose stability of the sterling is the issue, and trying to prepare your business for that can be pretty difficult. So what we would advise you to do is, if you can at all, get a Brexit health check. So we provide training seminars around the country. We have one done there recently in Dublin, and we're hoping to get one or two in the west of Ireland, in the south of Ireland, and go through the finer intricacies, like what Enterprise Ireland are saying. So, for example, what we're telling our member list is, I suppose, to identify and address the threats to your supply chain, awareness of the routing of your goods, implications of the custom declarations, as Eddie was saying there earlier on, and any custom requirements and supply chain delays. So if it's perishable goods or if there's a logistics issue, well, how long does that take, or what's the extra length it's going to take to actually get through the customs and the border checks? So these are all areas you have to take into consideration. And it's a learning curve for everyone. And what you may feel that you may not be directly affected, but when you delve into the finer details, again, going back to the slide that Rory showed there earlier on, in terms of the duty and the URI and the VAT, it does significantly impact imports and exports. And as Eddie rightly pointed out as well. So I suppose to wrap it up, really, it's just a case of talking to your local Enterprise Ireland, or talk to ISME if you're an ISME member. I suppose fill out that checklist and get to try and understand where exactly it's Brexit is going to affect you, and be ready for a hard breakfast if that does happen. And from a sterling, from a logistics, transportation, depending on the industry you're in, how it's going to affect your particular business. To get into the finer details of it, we'll do a Q&A anyway, and we'll thrash out any individual questions.
So I think what I got out of this was that certainly in terms of accommodation, we see or the tourist trade, we seem to have a good spread of markets: the United States, Europe, the rest of the world, and the UK, and that we have slightly less exposure there than anything else. But when it comes down to any product or anything we make or we buy or we sell or we try to sell to people who come into the country, that's going to be more expensive because of Brexit, because of duties, tax, and all the rest of it. So I'm going to open it up to the floor now, so that you guys can ask your questions. Does anybody have a question for the panel on something? I know we've got people from construction. Do you, in terms of construction, when you buy products and that, do you get much stuff in from the UK?
Yeah, just saying there, I don't buy any products from overseas. I'm just working in the industry, just as a normal day-to-day block, like, so I really can't see a massive change for me in my industry. So it'll only be if you're involved in bringing stuff from overseas, like the UK, and they're going to be a third country then. So for me, the minister is not going to affect me.
In terms of fisheries?
I just work in the fishing industry, but all I can see is that the quotas are going to be reduced, so that'll have a big impact on us. We can't, at the moment, we're shut down at the moment on the West Coast with the EU, like, they've got Irish fishing grounds shut down, like, and when we leave when the Brexit comes through, like, the English people will have more fishing grounds over us. That's hard to say.
I know we've got a craft brewery here in Clifton. In terms of bringing in things like hops and the sort of stuff that you need to make beer, do you have an exposure?
In a word, yes. Certainly, not just our core ingredients. Well, one of them, we get European hops, but our distributor is based in the UK. We've been talking to them about their Brexit plans, and they're probably going to use one of their European offices, switch their headquarters to a European office to try and get around it that way, because a big portion of their business is outside the UK. But for a lot of other things we need for operations, processing bits and pieces. We buy a lot from the UK over the course of every year, and day-to-day living as well. I've heard that there's going to be a new prioritised shipping lane from Amsterdam to Dublin, but I that's just going to add days and days, and I don't see how that's going to be anything but negative for the whole of the country in terms of cost of living, cost of doing business, and it's going to be a shock for everyone, because no matter how effective we are at telling people to prepare, no one's going to be prepared enough.
I mean, this thing about capacity, people talk about changing markets, it costs a lot and takes time to change market. But I know we're bringing the biggest container ship in the world to come in and out, or whatever, roll on, roll off, to go in and out of Dublin to provide us with capacity. If there was a real, let's take medicines and stuff like that, Eddie, do you think there's the capacity to bring in critical items to Ireland quickly? Is there spare capacity in the networks of people like DHL and that to help out?
Well, there is. You have so many different methods of transport at the moment. So effectively, by all accounts, everyone is going to say that there is going to be a delay going through the land bridge, and they're talking about tailbacks of goods moving through from Calais into Dover and vice versa. But there are other options. There are a lot of carriers and a lot of aircraft around Europe that will be sitting idle during the day, which can be chartered to move goods in and out. So it's a large cost, but there are options to move goods using chartered aircrafts or using other methods, such as that lady was saying there, looking at moving ferries directly from one port within the EU mainland into Ireland. Now, they don't operate every day. It's a slower method of transport. But if you're looking for, if there needs to be goods brought in quickly and effectively into the country, there are other methods such as air transport, and it is available out there.
One of the interesting things about Brexit, if you take the United Kingdom, they, in preparation for the 29th of March, are repatriating every single military transport plane that they can from across the world, out of Afghanistan, out of Honduras, out of anywhere that they're servicing, basing them in the United Kingdom to actually go along and distribute goods. So there are ways to go along. So Sharon, can I ask you a question? You deal, a lot of the products that you deal, are they from Ireland, or where are they coming in? This is fabrics and clothing.
Up to 70% of my stock from the UK, and I'm an ethical retailer, so most of my clothes are made from organic fabrics and ethically made. So all of those garments have to be forward ordered 6 months in advance. So I've already done my spring summer buying for next year, and now you're talking about a hard border. I'm worried now that my stock for spring summer arrives in January, and it will continue to be delivered until probably the end of April. Do I have to start paying VAT and extra duties from the 29th of March on the remainder stuff? Or I thought there was going to be kind of an interim period where everything's put in place.
Yeah, I think the key issue is that transition period to, where you have until 1st of January 2021 is dependent on a withdrawal agreement being reached. So the long-term relationship with Ireland or EU and UK will be with a free trade agreement, which they want to negotiate. So if there's what we call 29th of March, well, then you have a problem, because then we jump to as if you're importing from Russia or US or any of those countries. So if I was in your shoes, I'd be going back. So I think it's unlikely. I think they will do a deal. My gut feel is there's too much to lose on all sides that they make 29th of March, but then you've just pushed the can down the road. So if I were you, I'd be looking at your contracts and saying, okay, who's responsible for paying the duty from the UK into Ireland and clearing it and landing it? The VAT, I think you will need to put a defer guarantee in place with the bank so that your goods are not held up when they arrive in. So the VAT is really a cash flow issue for you. The duty is a real cost. So under your current contract, who's responsible for that? It would be an important thing for you to ask.
Eddie, I was under the impression that the discussions taking place in Brussels was that if something is actually in the transport system, you know, at midnight on the 29th, that would not be subject to that, everything afterward.
Well, there's some of the negotiations going on at the moment where if you've made a full purchase of your product before that date, as Rory is saying, have you made a full purchase of those products? Are you paying for that product as it's imported, as it's dropped? Okay.
When I placed the order 6 months ago, that's a guarantee. I can't cancel that order. I have to pay.
Yeah, so that's you know, leading up before Brexit, they are looking at in terms of let's as Rory was saying there, if there's a soft Brexit, it's probably going to be, you know, no duty put in place on products. So, you know, 95% of the commodities that'll be imported, there won't be duty applicable on those products. So you'd be looking at a payment of VAT, as Rory's saying there. But if it's a hard Brexit from that date, if you've purchased the product prior to the changeover to Brexit, they're trying to negotiate at the moment that there's no application of duties during that period. After that date, anything that you purchase, if it's a hard Brexit, duty and VAT will be applicable after that date.
Just, I think you'd be an ideal lady now to fill out that scorecard and sit down with a mentor, because it would specifically help you with that. Because there's a couple of things. As a small purchaser, your options in terms of negotiation contract terms are probably quite limited, with all due respect, and I don't mean any disrespect to anything. But that's what I would experience with a lot of clients. And a lot of the distributors that are selling from the UK are actually doing it on the back of an agreement they have with their supplier, and they have what they call UK and Irish distribution rights. But come the 29th of March, that doesn't matter. So you need to probably look at actually where is that product coming from originally? Who is originally selling it into your distributor? And look at that. Are there options there, you know, that might de-risk it for you?
Just one thing to consider for your particular product as well, that there is relief as well on children's clothing coming in from third country. So understanding what your product is, so I think it's up to the age of 11, there are certain reliefs in terms of taxes on your product as well. So it's just to understand, as I was saying earlier, what your product is, the commodity code that's actually applicable to your goods will dictate that rate that you're going to pay. So just to understand that and start to think about, you know, what you're bringing in, what type of product it is, and what am I actually required to pay.
There's a very good website, actually, if you know what your product is. On Intertrade Ireland, they have a landing page where you can key in your details of your product or what you're buying, and they will give you the expected worst case scenario in terms of duties or codes. So at least you'll be able to quantify your exposure. But I'd say talk to somebody.
I wanted to ask David, in terms of your membership, what kind of percentage do you think have gone through the sort of processes that Breda is talking about with Enterprise Ireland, Leo, or anybody else doing these audits?
Yeah, it's actually a quite small percentage. You're really probably only talking about 20%. And again, there's various reasons for that, because 80% plus of our membership is on the micro side, so from the 1 to 10 employees, that, again, going by the industry that they're in terms of services, financial, insurance, feel that Brexit may not significantly affect the business. But that's not to say that comes with a health warning as well, because just because it's a gut instinct that they may not feel that it doesn't directly impact it once you get into the finer devil of the detail, there's unquestionably it will affect an awful lot more. So there's a little bit of nervousness around it, but at the same time, it's a case for people are being a little bit lax on it. When it comes to micro SMEs, time and resources is an obvious challenge. So that's probably a lot to do with it as well.
I want to ask Gerardo,
if you look at stuff like, I mean, where we are here, we have, say, Galway 2020 happening, obviously, in 2020, hopefully, if it doesn't slip like Brexit. You know, we're going to be looking at 1.7 million people coming into Galway. I mean, do you see that as being an opportunity for us to go along and expand that out and market ourselves?
Absolutely. I was attending an event the week before last in Athenry, and they already have a lot of things that they would have done on the back of Galway 2020. But I mean, it's something that we, as a community, you should have already started engaging. You know, if you're living in Natural Hazard Plan, there's plenty of other locations that would have already put their foot forward. So I mean, it's not that it's already too late, but I mean, to capitalize, again, you have to start early. But the, yes, there'll be, there's just expectations there'll be a massive footfall in Galway based on the previous experiences of cities like that. But the reality is the businesses there are already, like, you know, ramping up their efforts. There's a number of rooms that are going to be coming online in Galway to try to cater for that. And the spillover business you'll get as far out as here might not be, you know, substantial.
So what you're saying is we should be preparing for that, because we also have, you know, Alcock and Brown and Marconi. We have that coming up next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's about linking in with Galway and, you know, and Tourism Ireland and Forty Ireland, just to see what kind of things that they're already, like, distributing, and try to just, again, jump into those distribution channels and see what can you actually make out of it. But again, it's not in the immediacy, so I would actually expect things, you know, perhaps up to Varna, you know, be able to actually get a little bit more, but further out, the impact is, would be actually be much more.
Yeah, Ben Crowe from Canberra Blue in Clifton. I'm sitting here realising just what exposure I have to the problems here, because I make fused glass, and my raw material is manufactured in America, in Portland, Oregon. It's imported then to the UK, to a UK distributor, wholesaler, from whom we purchase. And obviously, you know, it's all done in sterling, and the courier charges from the UK are very, very favourable. To the extent that I can import 30 kilograms of raw material for just £10 sterling. Now, I've been in touch with my supplier, and he says that he has absolutely no plans whatsoever in regard to Brexit, because he doesn't know what the implications will be. It doesn't appear that they're making any contingency plans. So coincidentally, we were having a discussion about that today, and my response was to look to Europe for an equivalent supplier. Well, I get a volume discount from the supplier in UK. That might not be available to me. It's a 20% volume discount, so that might not be available to me to any supplier in Europe. Plus the fact that the shipping charges might well not be 30 kilograms for the equivalent of £10 sterling. But it shocked me that this supplier in the UK had absolutely no plans whatsoever in place to, for example, open a European branch of his own distribution. The 100 euro example you gave earlier on, increasing by 63%, is quite a shock.
Yeah, I suppose hope is not a strategy, and that seems to be the problem with a lot of companies, is that they're hoping that a deal will happen. The example there you gave is the UK is currently within the single market, and once the goods arrive into the UK, they're completing customs clearance from the US on a bulk import and paying the taxes. So once those goods are cleared within the UK, they're free to move anywhere within the EU as they can. But the problem you will have now is all those goods imported into the UK, cleared into the UK, re-exported to another third country, they'll get the benefit of probably a suspension on the duty at import because they're re-exporting back outside that zone. Whether or not they'll pass that onto you is, I don't know, but that's a significant impact that you have. Those goods moving back out of Ireland, you're going to have an export customs declaration out of the UK, an import into Ireland if it's from the UK. So these are all of the things you see that your supplier needs to start factoring in now at the moment as well.
And then, of course, there's the implication that I actually export to the US the finished goods and to other places outside Europe as well. So I'm familiar with the paperwork that's involved. So now you're looking at least doubling the amount of paperwork.
Yeah, if you're going to be exporting to the UK, it's the exact same process as if you're exporting to the US.
My question concerns services rather than goods. I'm maybe the only one here who is of interest or interested in that. I provide a service, a consultancy service, to the UK. Are there any things that I should be considering that haven't been mentioned as part of the goods?
What service is it?
Consultancy.
I mean, the one that would probably jump out right now, if it's a business-to-business, B2B, you're charging a service. I'm assuming there's different places, supply rules, etc. But I mean, effectively, it's as if you're providing a service. It's as if you're providing a service to a US or whatever, non-EU. So you would be zero rating that for VAT. VAT would fall out of the VAT net. So that may be a cost. If the person you're providing consultancy to can reclaim it or not. So for example, if you're providing a service to banks, then it's a real cost. You can't get that back. So one advantage is you're not charging them VAT. That doesn't mean that the UK won't charge assessed VAT on the way in, but that's one that would jump out. I don't know if you're exposed on the foreign exchange side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, you would need to look at what's my break even foreign exchange rate. You probably don't have a lot of costs in sterling, so you may move into, well, what's at what level will I not want to do this at? It may be a sterling bank account. It may be a currency share agreement. It may be a hedging, or it may be invoicing in euro, which I normally recommend to the smaller suppliers is. It's a big player, let them take the foreign exchange risk. I have a number of clients in the medtech sector who are actually invoicing the large Medtronics and Boston Scientifics in Galway in euro now. They just said, listen, we can't deal in dollars because the exchange rate has moved 20%, 30%. So they just say, you take the risk. And there's a bit of pushback, but finally they understand we don't want to put you out of business either. So they will be the conversations. I would have. There is going to be opportunities in as Breeder says, there are a lot of companies now that are going to want to come into Ireland as well. UK companies are going to set up a presence here. You see it already happening in relation to coming out. But I think you need to minimise, as I always say, either price risk into a contract or you transfer the risk. That's probably one of the big things I would say.
All the negotiations happening on Brexit at the moment have to do with hard goods. It has to do with getting stuff, physical stuff, across borders. The issues around services, the transfer of virtual value and that has not even begun to be addressed because the UK wants to leave and just negotiate on hard goods, whereas the EU is saying, no, we have to talk about banking, we have to talk about electronic commerce, consultancy and all these things as part of the deal. And these services actually account for, I think it's what, 80% of the UK economy is services. And, so the issues you're talking about have yet to even begin to be thought about. So, I would take the advice that's been given here is, look at how you bill, look at how you do. But, I don't know what, do you have any idea what would happen on the 29th of March? If services are not covered by the exit agreement, do things stay the same or do they change?
I think the big difference would be the VAT. So it just becomes a third. We do have a precedent. We deal with third countries, as you have. You're dealing with the US. It's the paperwork. If it's a hard Brexit, it'll move to, the U0 rating for VAT, as if you're selling, as I said, to a through a third country. I mean, the only other area, just briefly to mention on, which we didn't talk on, which is a big advantage, is the whole VAT refund scheme for, you know, people in the retail trade as well. So UK visitors, now they'll probably look to shut that down some way, but UK visitors will be as if they came from the US, you know. So talking to your VAT reclaim provider, but effectively, again, they fall into third country, they should be able to get their form stamped or their little swipe card and get their VAT back when they leave the country. So that's an advantage on the retail side that you should be setting up to take advantage of as well.
Well, folks, I suppose just listening to everybody, I suppose what I'd say from a banking point of view, it's, I suppose, to identify from each of the speaker where there could be a potential gap, be it cash flow or a logistic point of view or whatever. But I suppose we don't have people beating down our doors in the bank worrying about Brexit, you know. But hopefully after tonight, it might create a bit more of awareness. And I suppose I just reiterate the message that all our professional people have said here tonight, that, you know, now is the time to fill out your scorecard with Breda or sit down with Rory or with David or whatever, and find out, is there a potential issue here? And I suppose from a banking point of view, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of the import-export businesses we deal with, you know, we've been talking to over the last couple of years. Most recently, we've set up a NAP called FX Pay, which, just to give you an example, up to this, we may have had a car dealer that would be importing secondhand stock from the UK. He'd have to go into the bank, get a draft, you know, time, cost. He can now do that, book his exchange rate in real time, big saving, you know. So we're having those conversations. I suppose I'm going to leave some brochures on the Brexit funding options that are available. It was touched on by some of our colleagues earlier on. It's called a Brexit loan facility, for those of you that haven't heard about it. There is some eligibility criteria, but I think most businesses will pass that. I think it's, you know, if you have something like 15% of your revenue is done through sterling, then you will be eligible. You test your eligibility through the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland website. I'm going to leave the handouts here, anyone that wants to take away with them. And by all means, I'm available. Give me a ring on the phone after that. Okay, thanks, Colin.
So if there are no other questions, I'm going to ask Terry to summarize and give us an idea of the next steps, because everybody seems to think that Brexit, just because Brexit happens, that there's nothing that needs to be done. But there are a series of steps that we've been looking at with the Chamber of Commerce, with Paddy and that, discussing about what needs to be done next. How do we, irrespective of whether they give us an extra year, there are things that have to be done. Now, what are we going to start looking at in order to make sure that we can, coming up to actual Brexit, have a meeting very close to it and give you all the tactics that will allow you to go along and deal with some of the issues that are there and provide more detailed, real business-focused process advice on how to deal with the realities of Brexit that emerge from the discussions. So I'll hand over to Terry.
Thanks, Colin. I was just thinking there, when I was listening to Eddie going through all the ins and outs of shipping something here and shipping something there. If you go back 100 years, if Alcock and Brown were considering coming over to Ireland to create their very first non-stop transatlantic flight, what they did was they had their plane in Manchester, they broke it up, shipped it across to the US and built it there and flew it back. But I think if that was today, it would be a bit of a longer event than they had, logistically speaking, unless DHL could help them out back then as well. But just to say that the Chamber of Commerce is delighted to help and support and bring this event to Clifton. It's Colm, I think you're early to the message on this locally. I think, yes, all the national organisations have this Brexit and that Brexit, but you're the first person in the area that has brought this really to a serious level, where you've brought speakers down, great speakers here tonight, and you've localised a lot of the information that's really important, I think, for everyone. And I think only now, just even judging by the numbers here, the people are only starting to understand it. And the fact that you've done this early on and brought some of these obvious things to us at this point is fantastic. So I think we should give you a round of applause. Everyone give Colin Murray an applause. Just in regard to some of the next steps, I suppose, some of these are high level and some of these are more localised, but I mean, in regards to one of the biggest industries in this area is obviously tourism, and how can we as an area mitigate the damage that Brexit could do? And just something that Eduardo said here earlier in regard to collaboration. I mean, one of the biggest things that we've been working on with, the Chamber's been working on the last while, is collaboration with all of the community groups in the area, and the activity providers and accommodation providers have come together to market the area to the visitor under one brand name, under Connemara.ie. So that's actively happening, where we've taken Connemara and the Aran Islands, and they're being marketed together to be launched next month. And that has brought together all the state agencies, from the Gaeltachta to Cork County Council to Fáil to Ireland, National Parks, the Chamber of Commerce ourselves, and a huge amount of other businesses have come together, or organisations together, to market the area into one brand. So that's one thing that we could do as an area to market ourselves. And within that, I suppose we can look at the old markets. I mean, people run about the UK, but I mean, to consider trade shows and whatnot, that, I mean, the first time that Connemara attended a trade show as a collective was last year, for the first time, really, as a collective together under one brand was last year, and that was funding through Galway County Council. So we need to do some of the basics, I think, to help mitigate the old things. Things like looking at your websites and whatnot, are they translated into different languages, and is your e-commerce all available in those languages? These are basic things. What other opportunities are there to market the area? Of course, one of the big things that I'd have to mention is the Alcock and Brown Festival next year in June. I mean, things like utilising these unique assets we have. That festival should be one of the major springboards for the area. So in terms of the next steps, I suppose, one of the big ones is to inform even the people that are not here. So this is recorded tonight by the radio. We'll be sending out these slides. And boiling down some of this information, there is so much information, it's quite difficult to get your head around the whole lot of it, and everyone has a different situation. I suppose in regard to non-tourism, things that Connemara can do, there was a comment earlier about how many cows in the country, and there's lots of cows and lots of sheep in Connemara as well, but something the area could do, if somebody could grab the bull by the horns, so to speak, and that is Connemara can get a protected geographic indication, PGI, European designation, for any products that are made to a certain percentage in this area, and that's a designation we can get and have. It's already secured for Connemara land, but it can be done for the actual area, the full area. So any goods or services, I think, produced within the geographic area of Connemara can be get this special European designation. Also, I believe there's two other audits called to be carried out as well as part of this critical infrastructure audit on power and electricity and whatnot. Broadband, how it will be affected by Brexit, and how, as you said at the start, how the volunteer services will be impacted in terms of, as you said, the RNLI and parts and whatnot. And just to follow up there, to say that there's a follow-up in February of 2019, we'll have probably another one of these, just to see how things have gone and where things are going. And so, thanks, Colm.
Nobody should ever come to Connemara and leave here without something special and unique from Connemara. And I want to thank Ben, who has made a unique piece of Connemara glass for each and every one of our panelists here, so they will go home with one of our very special products. Okay? So a round of applause for Ben. I just want one more time to thank the panel for coming down, and no matter how rough the road is to Brexit, it'll never be as bad as the M59. But anyway, cheers. Good night.